Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You need to network genuinely so that you know what's going on out there. You have people that you can help that then can also help you when you need it.
Welcome to the Schmidt List, the podcast for people dedicated to managing successful projects, developing impactful products, and building engaged teams. And now, here's your host, Kurt Schmidt.
Darren, thanks for joining me on the show today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
So you founded Irish Titan, and it is a pretty staple company in the Twin Cities here. So tell me about how it got founded. How did you, where'd the idea come from? You were like, I love e-commerce so much, and...
sort of. I guess, let me think where to start in answering that question. So I always knew I was going to start my own company. A lot of people were surprised I didn't start my own company sooner, but I was blessed with really good bosses. I really, over the course of my career, only had one bad boss, if you will, and he or she shall remain nameless. So I'm not trying to play a game with, like, guess that person. But those really good bosses, which were both good leaders and managers, I think allowed me to have a good enough experience that I'd never had that kind of FU moment where I like jump off the cliff and start my own company until a little bit later. The last gig I had before starting Irish Titan, I was CIO at Second Swing Golf, and I had P&L responsibility for everything digital there. I've been in e-commerce since 99. I knew I was going to start my own company at a certain point. The two ideas I had were actually a digital agency e-commerce focus or a fitness technology product. And when Second Swing Golf filed bankruptcy, they appoint a receiver. The receiver steps in, kind of run the company to closure. They kept the CFO to handle the bank account. They kept me to do everything else and got rid of the rest of the executives. So at the end of that experience was when I was like, I'm not going to work for anybody else again.
I don't want to go through that again.
I'm going to succeed or fail on my own merit. And that's when I started Irish Titan.
That's cool. So, and tell me, what do you focus on at Irish Titan? Obviously, e-commerce, but what other services do you guys do there?
So we're full service, which I always do air quotes around, because it's a phrase I sort of hate. But what I mean by that for us is, at Irish Titan, using just our employees, we have, as we like to say, a Titan-only model. We don't use contractors, freelancers, or offshore resources at all. And there's nothing wrong with those models. I've just been intentional about this model. So with just our Titans, we have creative, marketing, and technology stacks, if we will. And so we work with our clients to build, strategize, manage their digital properties. Most of those properties are e-commerce. About 80% of our work now is e-commerce related. So that means people that are selling things online on their sites. And we have designers, UX, developers, both front end and back end, strategists, digital marketers, content, et cetera, wrapped with project management wrapping around that. And so that's what we're doing.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So we talked earlier when we kind of pregame this. One of the things that I found fascinating was, how do you balance, because I imagine there's a weird gray line when you're building a site that sells things for people, and but then their expectations of what your role is in the actual sale of the things that they're doing, right? Because it's like, okay, we built you this thing, and well, my stuff isn't selling.
Right.
How often do you get into those conversations? Like, is it all about setting those expectations up front? Like, how have you managed that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that in our earlier days, we encountered that question a lot more, actually.
Okay, sure.
And I think some of
new to people.
Yep. I mean, e-commerce has come a long way. Yeah. I mean, like I said, said, I've been doing e-commerce since 99. I started Irish Titan in 2004, and I started with an e-commerce focus. And so our percentage of e-commerce business has grown over the years.
Sure.
But, you know, when we were younger, young little us, a lot of our clients at that time were also younger and smaller. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, not always, but sometimes those sorts of clients do have a little bit of naivete in what they think the digital world can do. They think it's sort of magical and mystical instead of measurable.
But that's more fun.
Right, exactly. Right. And so we did have to have those conversations more frequently earlier than we do now. But we still sometimes have to have those conversations. It does come back to managing expectations. Mm-hmm. And we try to bake that into our pre-sales process and our project process so that we are working with our clients about what their expectations are, what their content is, what their current metrics are, what we can expect afterwards, after a launch, if that's what we're doing, if we're building a site. Sometimes we're not building a site, we're working with an existing site to improve it. Mm-hmm. And so it's it really does come down to expectation management. So it was a really long answer to give you to say, yes, you were right.
No, it's great because it fascinates me in this digital space, because just like you said, and you put it so well, is that some people just think it's this magic buttons. And then when they see like the amount of effort and the cost and the amount of other stuff on the back end of it, because just like what we do when we're building, you know, applications or B2B stuff or internal applications, right? There's this whole deep end of it that people don't realize, right? So like you're probably really good at getting up an e-commerce site quickly and making it look good, but where does all the content and things come from? How do you product pictures, product descriptions, SKU? There's so much detail that goes in there. Do you find yourself having to help folks along that path as well?
Absolutely. Okay. I think that there are a growing number of moving parts in an e-commerce property because it used to be just basically product and a little bit of content sort of influence.
Yeah.
Now it's your product, it's your content, it's your product photos, it's your social presence, it's your checkout experience. There are a lot more moving parts, and sometimes people don't always appreciate that, or I guess better said, aren't aware of that.
Yeah,
we do a lot of B2B. Our geographical area has a lot of B2B opportunity. B2B is growing as an e-commerce vertical is growing at roughly twice the rate of B2C. There are some reasons for that, but one of the reasons is that there's some generational shift going on. Mm-hmm. A lot of B2B companies have been around for a long time, and maybe grandma and grandpa are now turning it over to granddaughter, and she's like, finally, I've been wanting to do this e-commerce project for a long time.
Sure.
Or maybe grandma and grandpa aren't turning it over yet, but their granddaughter is influencing them to the point where they start an e-commerce project. And like B2B oftentimes, not always, but often doesn't always understand like the content and product imagery, et cetera, that's necessary. And so different verticals, I think, have different speed bumps on the projects, but content, product imagery, product is really frequently one of the stumbling blocks.
So is there products that don't make sense to sell on e-commerce? This is probably a really dumb question, but it just popped into my head. And so, you know, I'm imagining like you've got to run into some things where you're like, oh, this doesn't really make sense to sell online. Or is it just, should everything be sold online?
Well, no. I think that there probably are few products that literally have zero opportunity for online sale. Most have some degree of opportunity.
Okay.
I think there are some that lend themselves less so online. So for example, before starting Irish Titan, I was at Second Swing Golf.
Yep.
Before that, I was at Wilson's Leather. Wilson's Leather had a pretty strong e-commerce operation, but there was some aspect of what Wilson sold that was absolutely better experienced in person because of the feel of leather, smell of leather, right? And so there are products like that, that there's a sensory experience to it. Offline makes more sense.
Got it.
We actually have a client that sells really high-end rebuilt diesel engines.
Okay.
Six figures.
Wow.
And up. And we have an e-commerce property for them that we've built, that they sell only a few engines every year on that, because most people aren't going to buy an engine. Most of the people in that market, I mean, I don't know about you, I'm not going to buy an engine like that.
Nope.
Regardless, I wouldn't know what to do with it. But most people in that market aren't going to buy a six-figure engine online, but they use that site to drive traffic and awareness. And we've worked on marketing campaigns that have different phone numbers associated with different campaigns so we can see what's working. And so there is still an e-commerce opportunity, but it's not just the sale online that it can drive.
So let's switch gears just a little bit. So let's say I'm a solopreneur, maybe I'm a side hustle type person, and I want to start selling products. What would be your recommendation? Like, how should I, what platform might I use? How should I get started? Like, let's say I'm just going to start selling my puka shell necklaces on the side or something.
Yep.
what would your suggestion be?
Yeah, so that's actually one of the reasons I love e-commerce, is because of the opportunity it provides solopreneurs or a side hustle. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons that e-commerce was one of the two areas that I wanted my company to go into when I was thinking about starting my own company, because I wanted to be able to be doing something that could provide opportunity for others to start their own businesses and build jobs and that sort of thing. I love that sort of opportunity that e-commerce provides, and there are different considerations, or there are different platforms, etc. So there's a long list of platforms. I mean, there are things like WooCommerce, Drupal Commerce, etc. We have official partnerships with Magento, Shopify, and BigCommerce.
Okay.
I think if you're a solopreneur selling a puka necklace, is that what you said?
Puka shells.
Okay. Then probably Shopify or BigCommerce makes more sense. Mm-hmm. Both of those scale really big too. Magento is a little bit more powerful, and so probably doesn't make sense for a couple of products. Mm-hmm. And of course, right now I probably just piss off all three of those platforms.
That's right.
Because all three of those can do really well big and can do well small too.
Well, it depends on what you want to do, right? Like if your plan is to scale and grow, you probably should look at a more robust platform out the gate so you don't have to refactor a year from now, right?
Yep.
So let's say I'm in a B2B, like you had mentioned, I'm the granddaughter or something, and I'm starting to explore B2B stuff. What would be your advice? Like what should I be looking at before I just start Googling e-commerce platforms?
So B2B is a different beast. The business considerations there are unique in the sense of, for example, channel conflict, right? If you're in the B2B world and you have a distribution network or a reseller network, what are the ramifications of you launching your website, selling your product? Mm. How are you going to handle pricing? How are you going to handle inventory availability? How are you going to handle customer groups? Things like that. And so channel conflict is something to think through. It's really not a reason anymore to not do it. I think in the past, I know 10 years ago, thinking right now off the cuff, I can think of three or four clients that decided not to do an e-commerce site because of channel conflict. Thinking more recently, I can't think of anybody recently at all that has made that decision because of channel conflict. So it's more of a how do you navigate rather than whether you navigate.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So that's one thing. I think your product mix is and data hygiene is something to think about. A lot of B2B clients might have hundreds of thousands of products with different SKU structures and inconsistent naming structures even. So for example, if you're selling auto parts, sometimes the parts have 1/4 inch, you know, 1/4, and sometimes they have 0.25.
Yeah.
And so those inconsistencies can be a problem unless you either scrub that data or do a little bit more robust implementation using a system that will scrub that data itself and interpret it, AI-like almost.
Sure.
So those are some of the considerations. And I guess the last thing that comes to mind from a B2B perspective are your integration needs and capabilities.
You mean like Salesforce or things like that?
Yep. Salesforce. So either CRM. I try not to talk about tools until after you talk about process, right? So either CRM, ERP, inventory fulfillment, all of which can roll up to ERP, those sorts of systems, as a B2B operator, you are probably going to want at least modest, if not more, integration with those systems right out of the gate when you launch your e-commerce system. And so depending on how antiquated those systems may or may not be, your integration capabilities may or may not be limited. In the B2C world, to bounce off of that a little bit, there tends to be the opportunity for less integration and or less antiquated integration constraints. Yeah. It seems like in the B2C space, there's not as many legacy ERPs, for example, that they're using. They're more either online tools or more current tools they tend to be using. B2B sometimes has some of those legacy systems.
So how has Amazon changed kind of the work that you do? Because you mentioned you've been in since 99, and Amazon in the recent years has become this powerhouse and has really set the tone for what people's expectations are in a shopping experience online. How has that affected the work that you do, and where you see things going because of that?
Yeah, you know, I think a day does not go by that we don't talk about Amazon, either with a client, a prospect, a partner in the community such as yourself, mm-hmm. Or amongst ourselves. I think that Amazon has been, I think, a really valuable part of the ecosystem mm-hmm. for many reasons. It has driven a higher level of customer service, customer experience. It has familiarized the e-commerce experience to millions of people. Mm-hmm. And so that's been good. I have some skepticism. I'm not sure if that's quite the right word. I have some concerns around Amazon. I feel like there are some things that they do that stifle competition and make it difficult for the solopreneur mm-hmm. Side hustle
yep.
that I have a lot of empathy for and want to support. Amazon can make it difficult for them to compete because Amazon has such a large marketplace share that if you're not on Amazon, you have to make a pretty conscious decision to not be on Amazon. Mm. And if you are on Amazon, you kind of have to play by their rules or else you'll get knocked off or have bad reviews and your product won't be listed, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some tech lash things to navigate there. You know, I think that Amazon has, I think, been really thought-provoking for our clients in the sense of how much to commit to Amazon performance.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is if you're an established e-commerce operation, you need to make a really conscious decision about whether you're going to be on Amazon or not and to what degree. And Amazon does not share customer information with you that you get if you're on your own branded site.
Okay.
And so if, for example, you're an e-commerce operation that cares a lot about your brand, you might want to decrease the level to which you commit to Amazon.
Oh.
Because you can't control your brand experience as much.
Right.
But that's a complicated decision.
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, you could launch your product on Amazon, right? Mm-hmm. And just merge traffic with the big mm-hmm. dogs, right? And take your chances there. But like you said, you have to think further out, like, where right. do you want your business to go?
Right. Yep. And what do you care about, mm-hmm. right? If I'm selling, if I come up with a better iPhone case, yep. right? Because I have my green iPhone case, everything green's a write-off. And for me at Irish Titan. And I hope nobody from the IRS is listening.
There's absolutely nobody from the IRS that listens to this
I'm
show.
Only barely joking when I say that everything green's a write-off. But if I come up with a better iPhone case that sort of lends itself to a quote-unquote commodity, then selling on Amazon might make sense because you have all that foot traffic out there. You can piggyback off of their operations. If, on the other hand, I start to come out with Minnesota-themed clothing that is manufactured here in Minnesota, and I want to include a really strong brand experience in that offering, then I might not want to go on Amazon, or at least not as much, because that's not a commodity. That's more of a brand, and that influences the degree to which you commit to an Amazon operation.
Mm-hmm. I want to switch gears again real quickly, because I want to talk about Irish Titan and how, you know, the culture and how you've built the team there. Like you had mentioned, you refer to them as Titans, right? You know, everybody's all in the same group, no work from, you know, like across the country right. or, you know, 10 people in Costa Rica sort of thing. So what have you found over the years? Like, how have you been intentional about building your culture? What's worked for you? What's some things that might have not worked and you've reset from there? But how have you found success in kind of intentionally building that strong culture that you have over there?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that some of our success has probably been through just dumb luck, right? Or maybe I'm just being a little bit self-deprecating, but I think that from the beginning, I had a pretty clear vision of what kind of company I wanted. One of the reasons I started Irish Titan is because I wanted to create the kind of company I always wanted to work for. I had a pretty clear vision of that. I defined somewhat intentionally our culture pretty early. Mm-hmm. I didn't define it before starting Irish Titan. There's a guy, right there's, I guess, a bit of a irony because the author's name is Guy Kawasaki. yeah. And so you probably heard of him.
Yep.
And he wrote one of my favorite books called The Art of the Start. Mm-hmm. And one of the chapters talks about the notion of not defining your culture and your brand until you have a product or service that you're selling. Mm-hmm. And at that point, then you have some experience about what's working, what's not, and can reflect rather than try to predict what it is about you that defines you.
Yep.
And so I love that book. And so I didn't really spend too much time trying to, I guess, document Irish Titan's culture until we had a few years under our belt.
Sure.
Ironically, I happened to, this was a long time ago now, but Amazon had an internal PowerPoint that got leaked that really wasn't anything too confidential, but was talking about some of their culture expectations, et cetera. Mm. So I saw that. That inspired me over a few beers at night, look at what was working for us. That kind of gave me a little bit of a model. And that's when I came up with our culture or our values, which is one of the, that's one of the two legs of our culture, mm-hmm. if you will. And our internal values are defined as POTUS, which has nothing to do with politics.
Sure.
It stands for passion, ownership, teamwork, impact, and skills. Mm. So those are our five internal values. In 2011, I was fortunate enough to meet Simon Sinek, who wrote Start With Why. Mm-hmm. And this, I met him between his TED Talk video and between when that kind of went big and the release of his book.
Okay.
And so it was sort of early in his ascension. I was lucky enough to be a part of a small group that met him and talked with him. Mm. And in that meeting, I defined our golden circle, to use Simon Sinek talk.
Sure.
Our why is business first, online second, and our how is partnerships, not transactions. Mm-hmm. And so the two legs of our culture, if you will, are our values of POTUS and our golden circle, especially of business first, online second. So those have been pretty consistent from the beginning. And I think that's helped put some cones up in the road to help guide us.
Yeah.
You know, I think that what has worked better than others sometimes has been people, right? Because I got my MBA at St. Thomas and had a really good experience. I paid for it out of pocket, so I made sure to get a good experience.
Yeah.
You know,
squeeze everything
exactly,
out of it.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so I do a lot of mentoring and those sorts of things with some MBA students. And a few months ago, a lady asked me, what's the best and worst thing about your job? Mm-hmm. And I said, I'll reframe that question to ask it in a different way because then I can answer in one word. And so I said, the best and most challenging part of my job is people. Mm-hmm. Because I had a Titan-only model from the beginning. And yep. So I'm an extrovert. I like being around people. I get energy from that. I get energy from them challenging me. I get energy from seeing them grow, giving mm-hmm. them opportunity, et cetera. So what's worked better than at some points in our history than others is how well I have managed and led our people. Mm-hmm. And the, I guess, intersection of not just right butt in the right seat, because that's a common phrase, but right butt in the right seat at the right time. Mm. Because at various points in our growth, different people were differently capable of management and leadership. You know, when you're a team of 5 or 10, that's different than when you're a team of 30.
Yeah.
And so we've had to navigate that.
I feel what sets people up for success is exactly what you talked about, is that you actually had a vision for what you wanted to build, right? I see so many people get started in a company or business because they want to just make stuff, or they, do you know what I mean? Yep. Like they're like, yep, I'm good at this, so I'm going to start making these things. Oh, people want more of them, so I'm going to hire somebody to make more of them. And then all of a sudden they turn around and they've got 10, 12 people and they're like, oh crap.
Absolutely. Right. Like I would say, I mean, we don't really compete, but we're broadly in the same general mm-hmm. space.
Yeah. There's right? a Venn diagram there.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a big fan of Venn diagrams. I use them actually from a music perspective too. Yeah. Here's the one I talk about all the time. Yeah. So, and now I'm totally going off script.
No, that's good.
That's
good.
So Lynyrd Skynyrd and the Allman Brothers mm. have a Venn diagram, and they could do a concert together back in the day.
Sure.
The Allman Brothers and Grateful Dead have a Venn diagram mm-hmm. and could have done a concert back in the day. Mm-hmm. But it is not the transitive property, because Lynyrd Skynyrd and Grateful Dead could not have really done
it. Too far. Too far.
So anyway, back to our...
We're going
to
do a whole other podcast on that. You're going to come back and we'll do that. That'll be great.
Right. Back to our topic at hand. Yes. Our broad industry is riddled with companies that start because someone is good at something.
Yeah.
That's great from an entrepreneurial spirit perspective because there are no barriers to entry in our space. Like one of the things I say all the time is that two people on their laptops at Panera can be a digital agency.
Sure.
Right? Because all you need are laptops and wireless. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even need to be your wireless.
Right.
And so that's great from entrepreneurial perspective. What sometimes happens, though, are those companies come and go a little bit because sometimes these developers, designers, strategists, whatever the role might be, end up realizing they don't really have the business acumen to handle client relations and receivables and payables and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Or they get so big, they realize, I don't want to manage a team of people anymore. There's a leadership model called 360 Leadership that talks about every leader in a company falls into one, sometimes two of these five archetypes. And the five archetypes are trailblazer, architect, coach, manager, and tactician. And tactician is someone who's good at whatever it is that company does. Trailblazer is sort of the visionary, lift a little bit of an EOS term. Someone who can sort of see, connect some dots, is kind of that crazy entrepreneur maybe.
Yeah.
Architect is someone who knows how to put together process and systems so a company can function well. A manager is someone who makes a company function well, and coach is someone who's really good at the people side of things. Mm-hmm. You need all five in any company of size. But I think what sometimes happens is a lot of tacticians form companies in our space and then get to a certain point where they are performing or feel burdened anyway to try to perform all five of those roles and either don't want to or can't let go enough to hire someone to perform those other roles for them to let them remain as a tactician.
I would say it's the rarity where people dig their way out of that, right? I mean, it's the exception.
Yep. It really is. And I don't know if that's more common in our space or not, but I think it is really rare. And I think that's why a lot of companies in our space don't quite get over some of those ditches, at least from a company size perspective.
Yeah.
Right. I know some people that have started companies in our space. They get to around 10, 12, 15, and they're like, I hate this, right? Because now I'm spending all my time in email, all my time as an armchair psychologist leading people or trying to. Mm-hmm. And I just want to go back to doing what gives me energy and what I was good at. So they go back to around five. And that's not a failure to go back to around five. And I'm making up numbers here. That's not a failure to be self-aware enough that that's what you get energy from. That's what you're good at. Go back to that, right? Otherwise, why start your own company and have your own job if you don't like it?
Right. Just go get a job then.
Right.
You know, if you're going to hate your own job, you got to pay the bills yourself.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And so I think that those who have the ability to let go and or the plan from the beginning to not be quote unquote doing too much of what a company does are the ones that can scale better, which isn't a better company than the smaller one. It's just if you're going to scale, you want to scale successfully.
Right. And like you said, you have to be planful. You have to have an understanding of where you want to go, what that vision is. I say it all the time on the show, like what's the dent in the universe you want to make, right?
Yeah.
And then staff up appropriately. This isn't rocket science. Like it's been done before.
Right.
You know, you can just follow other models like you mentioned. You just have to kind of get over yourself, right?
Yep. Exactly. Yep. Yeah. None of us are splitting the atom for the first time. And so the speed bumps that we hit that we sometimes allow to turn into crash barriers are usually self-imposed because I think the Twin Cities is great in this regard, and I think that there's a broader community across the country too, but there are a lot of people that you can reach out to get advice. Right. Like if I'm having trouble with something, I probably have 10, 15, 20 people that I know I could lean on to pick their brains either in my space, our space, or outside of our space if I need a perspective outside of our space. Mm-hmm. Any substantial failures that we have, really, there is not a good excuse for those.
Yeah, that's interesting you bring that up because I've found the same thing and I've coached other people around the same thing is, you know, you got to have that network. And if you're even, it doesn't matter if you're starting a business in this space or if you're starting a puka shell necklace company, you need to build that network around those people you can reach out to and ask advice and do this and be intentional about it. But what I see a lot of people, just the blinders come on because they're so concerned about what what's right in front of them and what they're making, is that they don't see an immediate value in that network. Right.
Yeah. I think that is a spot on observation. I have some friends that refer, there are a group of us sort of specialized a little bit in referring networking people amongst each other, like maybe some execs or high level management people who are searching for jobs. And so we circle some people between us to try to help them network. And a good friend of mine, Steve Staup, is the one who sort of leads that charge and is the best at that. But I've seen a few people in that circle that gets referred that come to me, for example, I'm just picking a random example from UHG, like a giant company, and some restructuring happened and they hadn't been networking for 20 years and they look like they got hit by a bus because they have no idea what to do next. They don't have a network they can reach out to and it can be challenging.
Yeah.
And so I see that a lot in the enterprise-wide sized companies. I think I see that more there than in the small SMB size. Mm-hmm. But regardless of what size, I think your advice is spot on. You need to network genuinely so that you know what's going on out there. You have people that you can help that then can also help you when you need it.
Yeah, I think that exactly what you said. Finding what value you can deliver to other folks and figuring out a way to go out and sell that before you go and sell your, iPhone cases that you making in the garage, right?
Right. A really good friend of mine named Kathy Paper, she has a consulting practice to help people network, to teach them how to network. And one of her golden rules is, because a lot of people are uncomfortable networking. Mm-hmm. The biggest reason is they are too worried about what they're going to say. Mm-hmm. And they're not spending enough time listening to others and going into it with the attitude of helping others, right? Because if you network to help others, you'll be much more genuine, you will be listening more, and then that will, it's sort of a pay it forward practice, because mm-hmm. then when you need something, then the other people are willing to help you because you've networked authentically with them and helped them previously.
How do you help, the people that work with you in that space, right? Because obviously you want people to get out and network and grow in their career and bring new things back to Irish Titan. Like, how do you coach people around that?
Yeah, so we try to support our Titan's exposure to events.
Oh, sure.
We do a lot of events ourselves. We sponsor a lot of events. We put on events. We attend a lot of events. And we tend to throw out company-wide invites to get Titans to those events. Mm-hmm. Some Titans are better than others.
Sure.
And that's fine. You don't want to force it, right, or demand it.
Yep.
But we try to encourage it.
You show them the value. You, right?
Yeah. And we try to go to events that have good content or good fun, that sort of thing, or both, hopefully. and so that's part of it. We try to support some training plans. And I think there's a spirit of, we want volunteers at Irish Titan, not hostages. and so I want people to know others, to know what's going on out there, to bring value back to us so that we are adopting best practices, whether it's in project management or technology or sales or marketing or whatever. And none of us know all of that. And so by being exposed to other groups, by networking, talking to people, they can bring those things back. Or if they start to develop a sense that they are going to find more purpose in some other company that they met via networking, then that's what I want for them. We want volunteers, not hostages.
So one last question here. And again, I want you to look in your crystal ball, which is beautiful, by the way. I can see it sitting right there.
It's green.
Yes, it's very, very glowy. If you were to say, let's say I'm listening to this and I work in e-commerce or something around e-commerce, right? Like not just products, but loyalty or things like that, right? What do you see for the future? What's coming that I should be paying attention to technology-wise or model-wise or customer service-wise? Like what's your thoughts?
There are three trends that I think are going to be driving e-commerce at sort of a macro level. And by that, I mean not overly specific to B2B or B2C. And one is what is commonly referred to as headless commerce now. And really what that means is APIs and technology have progressed to the point where you can use the best of breed of different solutions and tie that together. So you could use, for example, Magento's shopping cart and engine with a completely different front end wrapped around that. Mm. And same for BigCommerce and Shopify Plus and others. So that headless commerce, I think, is going to grow in popularity. popularity because it increases the flexibility for an e-commerce property to have the engine that it needs, which is largely driven by like SKU count and SKU complexity and industry and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But the user experience around that that is driven more by brand. Mm-hmm. So headless API is one. Headless commerce. Secondly, marketplaces. So even though I have some trepidation around Amazon, sort of a member of that tech lash, I don't know if I'd call it a movement, but tech lash opinion party right now.
Yeah.
Amazon has driven this marketplace movement where I think it's now 55% of e-commerce transactions take place on marketplaces. Mm. So that would be like Alibaba, like you mentioned, Amazon, eBay, et cetera. Mm. And that is going to continue to grow. And so you need to take into account what strategy you're going to have to be a part of that or to protect yourself against that. Mm. So I think that's going to continue to grow. And then, you know, I think that the last one, I try to think in threes. And so the last one is personalization. So you talked about loyalty. Personalization has been talked about in e-commerce for a long time. And I think that technology and data and solutions and adoption of e-commerce and mobile devices and everything has contributed to that becoming more real now. So Amazon has driven personalizing what products are recommended to you. Mm-hmm. That is now much easier to do on a branded e-commerce site.
Okay.
Personalizing your emails. Personalizing the experience that you get when you receive a product. I think those sorts of fingerprints are becoming more realistic in an e-commerce property. And I think the companies that figure out how to actually do that will get a leg up.
That's great, Darren. Yeah. So I want to thank you for joining me. But first, if I want to find out more about Irish Titan, where should I go?
So there are a couple of places. One is we do a big annual event every fall called Ecom Forum. And this year it is on October 3rd at the Machine Shop. It's our fifth year. There are between 400 to 500 attendees. It's about a half day of high energy, high content that I moderate. We have two panels, three spotlight speakers, which are TED style talks. We have a whiskey side chat, not a fireside chat, but a whiskey side chat, two keynotes, and bagpipes because bagpipes. So you can come visit us there if you want. And there's we have a website for it called ecomforummpls.com. Irish Titan is pretty easy to find. Our URL is, as you would guess, irishtitan.com.
Got it.
We are pretty active on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. We use each one for different purposes, like you really should with a social strategy, mm-hmm. right? But we're pretty active on all of those. I personally have historically not been all that active on Facebook, but my fiance kind of blew that up. And I think she kind of did it on purpose because she knew I liked not being too active out there. So now I'm out there quite a bit.
Get out there. Get out there.
Right. Right. She stirred it up. Instagram I'm on and Twitter some. I don't personally tweet too much. I don't know if you did, so I'm not trying to offend you, but I'm of the opinion that tweeting is sort of like texting for people who don't have friends. I get it from a business perspective and a brand perspective, and sometimes from a content perspective if you're a journalist, but otherwise it's not all that important.
Well, Darren, like I said, I want to thank you. I learned so much today, and I'm really glad that you took the time out of your busy schedule to stop by and chat.
Thanks for inviting me, Kurt. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to The Schmidt List. If you want to learn more about how Foundry accelerates innovation, check out foundrymakes.com. And if you'd like me to speak about establishing a growth mindset at your conference or with your team, drop me a note at kurt@foundrymakes.com. Oh, and the next time you're on the internet, head to iTunes and leave the show a review. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, because sharing is caring. I truly appreciate you taking the time to listen to the show, and I hope you have a fantastic week.